Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, my finest of friends, and also to any enemies who are listening. Welcome to Can I Have My Ball Back? I'm Richard Herring, and this podcast is all about the fun that can be had with testicular cancer. Well, some of it's fun. Not all of it is fun by any means. But some of it was surprisingly fun and funny and positive for me, in spite of that one slightly notable negative. If you're enjoying this podcast and you'd like to support me or like to know more information about testicles and more details about this incredible journey I've been through, my book, also called Can I Have My Ball Back, is now out in paperback. You can get it wherever you get your books from, and it would be lovely if you could buy it for yourself, for any friends you think would be interested. It's the perfect Christmas gift, is all I would say, for people who want to read about testicles on Christmas Day, which, who doesn't? Let's face it. We are now at episode 8, which is particularly triggering for me, the number 8 representing, as it does, two balls working together in harmony. They're arranged vertically, but that sometimes is the case if you're lying down. And it's going to be difficult for me, but I'm going to push on through. And that is because on this episode, you are finally going to get to hear from my actual factual oncologist, Dr. Anand Sharma. He's a wonderful man. He saved my life. But before we meet the man in person, let's meet him in my stand-up as we pick up the story a short while after my troublesome bollock was removed. 13 days after the surgery, I got in my car for the first time to make the 50 minutes drive to meet my oncologist. It was quite a tricky drive, I have to say. Tried not to go over any bumps. I was heading to the Mount Vernon Cancer Centre in Northwood for an appointment with Dr. Anand Sharma to find out what the next move was. I was pretty sure that I knew what the next move was. It was another terrible C word that people react to very badly, chemotherapy. I was shown through to Dr. Sharma's office by all the staff I met throughout this experience, but generally, given what they were going through as well with COVID, were so happy and positive, and this was another one, which is called Linda. This positivity that the NHS have in the wrong hands could become a bit Stepford Wifey, like being in a cult. But the thing about the NHS is that the people who work there are genuinely good people, because you have to be. You only do that job if you want to help people. I mean, you're certainly not doing it for the money. I suppose occasionally someone works for the NHS because they want to commit loads of murders or have sex with corpses, but you know, it's a good way of doing both those things. But I'm pretty sure that that lot, in spite of the publicity they get, are probably in the minority. You know, it's probably 52-48, isn't it? Linda gave me a leaflet with phone numbers, including her own, a personal one for me to ring if I was worried about anything at any time. It's incredible. They were really looking after me, and I don't think it's because they were planning to kill me or keep my cadaver looking presentable for when they were shagging it.
Dr. Sharma finally arrived. Linda hung around, I guess, in case I started to cry. She could look after me. Before he'd even sat down, Dr. Sharma wasted no time in telling me that he knew who I was and that he'd watched me on Taskmaster. Perhaps this was true, but the Daily Mail had just published an article about my cancer, fulfilling a lifelong ambition that that particular paper should run a new story about my bollocks. The only disappointment that it wasn't on the front page, especially given that's usually full of balls, so, you know. But I suspect he might have read that and not be a Taskmaster fan, but I took him at his word. Dr. Sharma had a look at the scar, which was healing well. He had a little feel of my depleted ball sack. Unfortunately, all the chat about Taskmaster had taken so long that he was nowhere near the ball fondling world record. He told me that the operation had been a success and that all of the cancer was gone, but it could come back. So as I'd expected, I had a decision to make. I could either do nothing and come back for scans every few months for the next few years, or have those scans, but also have one shot of precautionary chemotherapy now. If I did nothing, there'd be a 1 in 4 chance of the cancer returning, and I didn't really love those odds. I play poker quite a lot, and I know how often a 75% sure thing gets beaten. It's roughly once in every 4 occasions. If I choose the chemo option, that would reduce the chance of returning bollock cancer from 1 in 4 to 1 in 20. Those are odds I could cope with, though again, about 5% of the time they're proven to be deadly on the poker table. I didn't have to have the chemo if I didn't want to, and if the cancer did come back, they would still be able to treat it. Dr. Sharma assured me that the chemo would be pretty light, but for a little bit of real-world jeopardy, he did chuck in the fact that the chemo would weaken my immune system. At any other time, this wouldn't really have been too much of a worry. But this was during COVID, and I hadn't been vaccinated yet because at the time, it was just the elderly who had been, and only with their first shot. I decided I was prepared to risk it, especially when they told me that as a vulnerable person, I could jump the vaccination queue. I phoned up for an appointment and got one the next day. Take that, people who won't have cancer. Must be feeling pretty stupid now. I wondered if Dr. Sharma could tell me how I got this cancer, but he wasn't really able to do so. He said it was likely the roots go as far back as being in the womb, something may be happening there, creating this potential for this to play out. I asked him if it could have been caused by anything I'd done. Could it be down to too much beer or Diet Coke or sugar or having my phone in my right-hand trouser pocket? Or I used to play on my Acorn Electron computer when I was a teenager, and it had a really hot keyboard. It was always on my lap. He said that didn't matter. I said I'd been hitting the balls a few times. I was in Barbados with a girlfriend, and I went sort of into the sea, just up to my knees, and I got knocked over by a wave and hit my head. And for some reason, my right testicle swelled up to about 4 times its size, which was fine, except that on the plane home, it acted like a kind of altimeter. I could tell just everything. They should employ big bollocked men for that, rather. They'd save some money. I could tell you exactly when it was going up and when it was going down and how high it was. So he said that might have been the catalyst that set things in motion, which was a weird thing to think. But I'd forgotten I'd been kicked in the balls by a university lecturer as well. But when I was 40, I did it in the show. They've taken a beating, these things, I have to say. He took a look at me, my belly bloated by post-operation biscuits, and told me that the operation would have changed my metabolism, so it was important I lost some weight and got fitter, or I'd increase my chances of getting diabetes, high blood pressure, and other unpleasant stuff. I didn't want to survive this brush with death only to fall at the next hurdle, because I was too heavy to get over it. It turns out if an oncologist tells me to do something, then I do it. I decided to ditch the biscuits, and I got exercising as soon as I was able. I even raised some money for the hospital and for his charity that he was so keen on me raising money for, which is called the Cancer Treatment and Research Trust. It's a very good charity. I hope an oncologist never tells me to kill the president, because with great oncology comes great responsibility. So Linda asked me if I had any questions, and I only had one area of concern, which was when would it be okay for me to resume sexual relations with my wife? We'd still not risked it, and I worried that after the jock rash cream incident, she'd never be able to look at me as a sexual proposition again, or worse, only to be able to find me sexy if she was smearing unguent into my groinal sores. They seemed surprised that I asked about sex. Linda laughed. Oh, yeah, you're still quite young, aren't you? Which, I mean, I'm not, but I'm still hoping there's a few more years of shagging in there for me. I'd only asked about sex because I was worried about the stitches and whether they would split, but Dr. Sharma had assumed I was asking about the chemotherapy and proceeded to tell me I would need to wear a condom during sex for several months to protect my wife, presumably from the chemotherapy drugs in my system. That hadn't been my concern at all, but I was glad he'd misunderstood, because nobody else told me that for the rest of that, if I hadn't asked that question. I just really wanted to know if it was good to go now, before the chemo, but I didn't want to look like a sex-starved maniac, even though I was one, so I left it. I left it that. But I couldn't understand why it was months. How long would the chemo chemicals stay in me? Or was it because my sperm would be damaged long-term? After my initial bravery, I was too nervous to get clarification, and the internet was no help either. The websites that I found seemed to say the chemo chemicals would only stay in my bloodstream for a few days. What was this months shit? And how many months was months? 2 months or 22 months? That's the, those. I guess I was going to have to tell my wife that I was full of dangerous sperm, but I'd wear a condom and she could risk contact if she wanted to. It's the greatest aphrodisiac known to man. I mean, it probably is to her. My wife's a pervert, isn't she? Because, like, if you think about it, for one of the early years of our relationship, for a whole year, I had a Hitler moustache. She loved it.
So, as you can probably tell, meeting Dr. Sharma was a very important moment in my recovery, and I'm so delighted to say he's also agreed to speak with me for this series. And it was only a few months since I'd last seen him, of course, and my producer Ben thinks it's inexplicable that I began my chat by asking if he remembered who I was. But look, he has to meet a lot of people with cancer, and he's not looking at their faces, is he? He's looking at their bollocks. So if I'd walked into the sound studio with my bollocks out, he'd have gone, Richard, nice to see you. But it was my face he was seeing, and he might not be familiar with that. But also, I'm not so arrogant as to assume that every oncologist is going to remember every single patient. So I asked him, yes, Ben, I fucking asked him if he remembered me. What's your problem?
I remember you very well, and I think I saw you in my clinic in the heavy COVID times.
Yes.
And I saw you came on your own, and I explained to you what you had. So it was a good thing that you had your diagnosis done at an earlier stage.
Right.
Because you didn't have the cancer spread anywhere.
Yes, that's right.
And that was really good because it just made me feel confident that this person is a very... He looks after himself, okay. I would say. And because this cancer hadn't spread anywhere, we wanted to minimize the risk of it coming back again in future.
Yeah.
And I think we had a very frank discussion that if we give you chemotherapy, which will be one session of it,
yeah,
it probably reduces the risk of cancer coming back again to almost 95 to 98%.
Yeah.
And I gave you the advantages, disadvantages of what the chemotherapy will entail. Finally, you agreed to have the treatment, and I think all went well with your cycle of chemotherapy.
Yeah, it was all relatively... That was the worst part of it, probably, was the chemotherapy in terms of just I felt a bit sick for a couple of weeks, but it wasn't too bad. And because obviously, I think chemotherapy, a lot of people think, oh no, your hair's going to fall out, you're going to be weak, and obviously there's different levels of chemotherapy. So this is a fairly mild chemotherapy for testicular cancer.
So what I would say, and what I think you probably listen to lots of people on the... media is that if you want to have a cancer, testicular cancer is the best cancer to have.
Yeah.
Because it's almost 95% curable, and even if it spreads elsewhere, it's got a 90% chance of being cured. So it's two types of cancers. I think you had the milder form of testicular cancer, but to treat that, the chemotherapy is not as strong as other cancers.
Yeah.
But I would again say that if a cancer has to be there, testicular cancer is probably the best one because you can easily get it cured by right treatment.
Sure. And also it's the funniest one because it's of testicles. So, you know, as a comedian, it was definitely the best cancer for me to get. But try not to get cancer if you can, I think, overall. The only thing I thought was a bit weird was until I was diagnosed with cancer, nobody told me that testicular cancer was very curable. So it wasn't until I had the testicle taken out. Is that something that you're advised? Are you not allowed to talk about cancer until it's been confirmed as cancer? Because it seems to me, if you go day one, this might be testicular cancer, but it's very easy to treat. It would have made a slightly easier ride.
Yeah, I think what happens is everything happens in a rush.
Yeah.
You come for the ultrasound, then you give in a date for surgery. But we don't know whether it's going to be there. And people don't want to give you news.
No.
Which probably may make you feel more stressed. So many times it happens that the surgeons operate and they don't tell them what cancer it is.
Yeah.
Till they come to me and I explain everything to them.
Yeah.
It's a possibility that you may not have had cancer.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why they don't say it. And they leave it for... post-operative, when they see the tumor under microscope, what exactly it is, that's when the news is given to you.
Yeah, I still think you should say, if it is cancer, don't worry.
I think it's a very good suggestion, and probably this is something when someone goes for testicular cancer surgery, they should be given information about.
Yeah. So I was sort of wondering, because my ball was entirely, I mean, it was in the ball, but my ball had basically entirely become a lump of cancer. Have you any idea how long... it would have been progressing to get to that stage? Is that a long time or a short?
It would have been a long time.
Yeah.
And the problem is that it's very difficult to pick it up quite early.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the symptoms, because the area where it is, it's less likely for you to cause any problems.
Yeah.
And you're supported by your pants, you know, so you don't have the feeling.
No.
Unless it starts growing.
Yeah.
And just before we go ahead, I had a very good mnemonic which I made.
Okay.
I said, feel regularly. So you have to feel yourself regularly.
Yeah.
Pick it up early. Get it out if you have a lump and live normally. I used to treat breast cancer previously. And I used to always tell women, you know, that you need to examine yourself. That's a very good way of picking that cancer up. Before I became an oncologist, I myself never used to examine myself.
Yeah.
But I think it made me feel that this is something which I should do.
Yeah.
And I always tell the patients, feel yourself, because you are a better judge of yourself rather than anyone else.
Sure.
So it's a good thing. Feel regularly, pick it early, get it out, and live normally.
Sure. And that's good. Do men generally, I mean, you say that I came in, you know, it felt like I'd left it for a long time, for the whole ball was full. But is it a problem that men are leaving this a bit longer than they should?
I would say so, because I see quite a few men who come with far advanced disease as compared to yours.
Yeah.
And the cancer has spread to different organs.
Yeah.
I think that's probably particularly because we don't normally examine ourselves regularly. That's the most important thing, which you have clearly pointed out.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that because we are young, fit, you don't normally develop the symptoms because your body is able to cope with the stress.
Yeah.
And only when it comes to a later stage that you pick it up.
Yeah. But you're never going to be in trouble for going to your GP and saying, I'm a bit worried about something.
Exactly. So if you feel there is something different, it's pain or it's swelling, then better go to the GP. He'll just have to organize an ultrasound and blood test. And the key thing is that if you pick it up early, you can just get rid of it just by having a small surgery done.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably very important, that as soon as you feel a lump or any a funny feeling, go to the GP. He'll refer you for ultrasound, and that will be reassuring.
Great.
On the topic of examining yourself, I just have to share a joke with y'all. It may not be a joke, but it's just that one of my patients, probably he may be listening to it later on, and I'll ask him to listen to this as well. He always says that his wife told him that he shaves only for two people in the world. And one is for her. And one is whenever he comes to see his oncologist, that is myself. And that really, really, really made me laugh whenever I see him. And he always tells me that statement, you know.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, maybe he likes you more than he's letting on. You never know. You never know. Now, is there a chance with testicular cancer, if you get it early enough, that you'll just take out the cancer and the ball will survive? Or is it always the ball gets taken out?
No, unless it's a very, very small tumor, you generally tend to get it out.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantee that there are no small cells elsewhere.
Yeah.
So you have to get it out. And if it's picked up early, then you don't require anything. You don't even require chemotherapy.
No.
Apart from regular scans, you don't require any treatment to be given.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the thing I wanted to ask, which I never asked anyone, was once it's been taken out and looked at, can you have it back? Can you have it back in a jar, or is that something that never happens?
You can have it back in a jar.
Because I haven't got it. It's the question I've been asked the most is, have you still got it?
They do preserve it.
Yeah.
So it's preserved throughout your life.
Okay.
It's never thrown away because in future, if there's any problem happening, you may have to get it tested.
Okay, I didn't know that. So it's there somewhere.
It's there somewhere, and there are places where you keep the archival tissue.
Okay. So if I go in, it's like a library. I could take it out for a little while and have it on my table. I think it'd be a conversation piece.
Yeah, I think it's possible you can have it back, but I don't think so it'll be in the same way as it was removed.
No. And I'm quite squeamish. I'm not sure I really want to see it. I was very glad to be knocked out entirely for the operation. They were offering me local anaesthetic. Do many people take the local anaesthetic?
Few people do take it, but I think it's probably not advisable.
Yeah. Well, I can't see why you'd want to be around to experience that. And how was it? Because obviously, as you said, we were deep in COVID and in the second year of COVID. Did that have a big effect on treatments for people generally? Because I seemed to get seen very quickly. I was very impressed with how quickly I got
through. So the cancer guidelines clearly said testicular cancer is considered to be one of the most important cancers.
Right.
That if you have a patient, neither will the surgery be delayed, neither will the chemotherapy be delayed, neither will the scans be delayed.
Right.
Because not only does it affect the young people, but with chemotherapy, you can easily get rid of it. So COVID didn't come into our field for testicular cancer. But for other cancers, it was there, because if a cancer doesn't have a good life expectancy. Then they said that priority should be given to something which is more curable. Mm-hmm. Although now I feel that's probably wrong, but I think during those times, that was probably the best thing to do.
This is a terrific discussion, and I'm sorry to have to interrupt it, but we do, of course, have to go for some adverts, which will help pay for the production of this podcast. But we'll be back with Dr. Sharma after these very, very important messages.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Can I Have My Ball Back? Look, enough of my yapping. Let's just get back to the chat with my brilliant oncologist, Dr. Anand Sharma.
I know we talked about this a little bit, and there is probably no answer to this, but how does one get testicular cancer?
So far, we don't know any direct definite cause for testicular cancer, but we do know that it's a cancer which is not related to lifestyle changes.
Right.
So it's not related to smoking, alcohol, or any such things. But it's something which doesn't happen overnight. It's called as a germ cell cancer because it develops in the germ cells which germinate.
Right.
So testis in men and ovary in women. And for that reason, the theory is that you may be having some small cells which have been there for a long time, especially when you were a fetus in your mother's womb.
Right.
And probably you got exposed to something which we still don't know about. And that has led to those changes being developed later on.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why this cancer, we call it as cancer between the ages of 15 to 35.
Yeah.
So that's the age group which it develops. And it's a very slow growing cancer. Some people say that it could be related to a particular population area of a region like Scandinavian countries. Okay. So there are various theories which are there.
Yeah.
But I don't think those have been scientifically proven.
No. And I think I told you I was knocked over by a wave in Barbados about 20 years ago. My testicle grew about four times the size. And I didn't tell you, but also in 2007, I was in a fight with a man who kicked me in the balls. Is a trauma to the testicles possible cause of it as well?
Not that we know of. But I think what could also be possible is that those might have got the cancer earlier.
Yeah.
You may have found out later on in your life, but I think that's something which has bought it earlier, I would say.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. Trauma or any of these things would have caused it.
No. And you were saying to me before we did the interview that, you know, it is seen as a younger man's condition, but that you are getting some older patients getting it as well.
So I've got a large group of patients who are above 40. So I would consider for testicular cancer, above 40 is slightly older group.
Yeah.
And recently we have sent a publication as well in looking at the older population and how their response has been. I've had a patient who was 86 year old a few months back,
right,
who had testicular cancer as well. And I think probably now their biology might be changing and it may be coming up in the later stages of your life. But I have quite good experience in a large number of patients who've been above 40 and who've had testicular cancer recently.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. And sort of obviously the once you've had a desk removed, once you've had cancer, you are quite paranoid about it. And I've been paranoid about various things. I've come and seen you a couple of times and they've turned out luckily to be other things. But if you do end up losing both testicles or losing the second testicle, what kind of options are there for you if you lose both testicles?
So the incidence of having testicle cancer in the other testis is around 4%.
Right.
So you are at a high risk.
Yeah.
And so that's why if you've had chemotherapy, that reduces the risk of it coming back in the other testis.
Yeah.
Now, I've had few patients who've had both the testis removed. If you have both the testis removed, then you have to go on to testosterone replacement because you don't produce it yourself.
Yeah.
It will probably be affecting that and some sexual function as well. But with testosterone replacement, that normally overcomes it.
Does it? Yeah.
And you do have to be monitored for 10 years after both the removed.
And it's true, is it, that once, if you lost a testicle, once about 5 years have passed, then you're probably likely to be in the clear for the second one? Is that right?
Yeah. So I normally consider 2 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And if it's beyond 5 years, you're in the safe period. So we don't do scans after 5 years generally.
Yeah. So, there's a few things that came up that I didn't get a clear answer to. I was confused by how long, when you have chemotherapy, how long this stuff stays in your system, because I got lots of different answers from different people. I asked you when I could start having sex again without a condom, and you said that it would be several months, but the woman in the chemotherapy said it like a couple of weeks. So what was the reason you said several months?
If you see, by definition, the amount of time the sperm takes to mature, it's 62 days, I would say. Probably more than 60 days. So that is 2 months anyways.
Right.
And what happens is that the drug which you get, the chemotherapy drug, resides in the testicle, and that can lead to transmission of the chemotherapy drug into someone else.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing is that you're at risk of having another child with a damaged sperm because of the chemotherapy itself. That's why I say 2 months, 3 months, just to be on the safe side.
Okay.
I would say a few weeks is probably not the right thing because science doesn't say that.
Okay, right. And is there a chance that it's made me infertile? Because I've sort of just been assuming I'm infertile. Is that a mistake?
Yeah, I think it's a mistake because I would say you've got another testis which has got the same function to produce millions of sperms.
Yeah.
The other thing is that with the chemotherapy which you had, there is less than 1% chance of you being infertile due to the chemotherapy.
Okay.
So I would say if your other testis is functioning all right,
What channel?
You've got 99% chance of being fertile.
Okay, I'll take a bit more care. It's, luckily, we find it quite difficult to get pregnant, me and my wife, so that I think we'll be all right. we've got two. I think we've got enough. And with that choice of having chemo, do most patients, I mean, because it takes it from like 1 in 4 to 1 in 20, basically, or something like the chances of it coming back. Do most patients take the chemo? Or
So most of the patients, they tend to take the chemo because they don't want to be living in the life of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And to have chemotherapy, probably it reduces your risk quite significantly.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably a good way of having it because you're going to live for 20, 30, 40 years. So you just want to be secure. You want to be away from any stress, you know, because, and you've done it once, so you know that you've had the chemotherapy. So it's very less likely for it to be affecting you in future.
Yeah. In the book, something I discuss is the fact that I ended up, everything you told me to do, you had a sort of power over me. You told me to lose weight, which I did. I've put a bit back on, unfortunately, but hopefully I'm taking back off again. You told me to drink a couple of litres of water a day, which I started doing again. And you told me to raise money for your charity, and I did all of those things. Do you realise you have this power of your patients? And have you could use that for evil, right? I mean, you've used it for good so far, I think.
No, so I was just seeing someone yesterday and I was asking him to cut down on his alcohol intake. And he said he thought it to be a very powerful message.
Yeah.
But all the advice which I gave you is for a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
I ask you to be healthy because the problem is that after testicular cancer, we've seen that there is 60 to 70% chance of developing heart and diabetes problems.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I always say that keep yourself fit, lose weight, regular exercises. You do a lot of runs for charities and whatever it is you do. And that's really a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So you have to be fit because I'm not looking for you as a patient. I'm looking for you as 15, 20 years down the line. You shouldn't have any problems related to the cancer, which is 98% curable for you.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to be suffering with any medical problems later in the life.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I'm glad you're using that your powers for good. And tell us a bit about, because I did raise some money for your charity via live streaming our podcast, the CTRT. So tell us a little bit about what that charity is doing.
So it's the Cancer Treatment and Research Trust, which we run at Mount Vernon Cancer Center. So for the two cancers which are very close to me, testis and bladder cancer, my research team is trying to develop a biomarker, a marker in the blood which you can diagnose the cancer earlier.
Yeah.
So for testicular cancer, we don't have very sensitive markers so far. You do have a couple of markers, but not for everyone.
No.
And nowadays, people have CT scan. We've got MRI, which has no radiation. So we're trying to see if we can use the funds for doing that as well.
Yeah. And isn't that, being an oncologist, is it quite a depressing job because you're meeting a lot of people who are ill and seriously ill? Or is it nice because you're helping them?
It is a bit depressing in the way that you give bad news to almost half of my patients.
Sure.
But the pleasure which I get when someone says, you know, that I've given them a good news.
Yeah.
That's the pleasure which I get is not the pleasure which any other specialty gets.
Yes.
Like if you're a doctor who treats blood pressure or diabetes, it doesn't matter, you know, blood sugar is going to go down. But you don't get that pleasure if you've got the blood sugar of someone down.
Yeah.
But with me, when I see a scan of a patient and I say that, oh, the scan is clear.
Yeah.
It gives me immense pleasure because I feel that I'm making you happy.
Yeah. I guess the only other, while we got you, the only other thing, when I first met you, you said you'd seen me on Taskmaster. Had you really seen me on Taskmaster or had you just seen me and that someone told you who I was?
No, someone told me.
That's what I thought.
Dr. Sharma there, a wonderful man, but a liar. And I think that's what we will remember from all of that conversation. That's the only bit I'm taking away. Hey, look, his charity is amazing. It's CTRT, the Cancer Treatment and Research Trust. If you go to cancertreatment.org.uk, you can find out more about that. Donate and get involved. And there's a picture of Dr. Anand Sharma on his page there as well, if you want to have a look at him and see what he's up to. He's a good guy. I'm going to see him again in a few days for my six-month checkup. You know, we're good friends. He's probably in the top 10 people who've touched my bollocks in a number of times. That's a sad indictment of my life. Anyway, look, it's time for your favourite part of the podcast and my favourite part of the podcast. It's the part of the podcast that you write. Thank you to everyone who's been sending in messages and stories at cihmbb@gmail.com. Firstly, today we've got Tom. He writes in with an email with a poetic subject line, swollen balls. He says, I was 24 and in a new relationship. One Tuesday after a weekend together, I woke up with a sore ball. I thought nothing of it and cranked one out, as you do, thinking the distraction might help. Oddly, there was a tiny, tiny bit of blood, but I presumed it was just some weird after effect of the weekend. However, things got worse that morning at work, and by lunchtime I was having trouble doing anything other than thinking about the pain. I went to the loo to check myself and discovered that my usually wrinkly bollocks were taut and tight and the size of small lemons. I called the doctor and was given an emergency appointment later that afternoon. A tender 2-hour wait was followed by a painful 5-minute drive and an excruciating 30-second walk from my car to the surgery. The lovely doctor took one look, instantly said epididymitis, and gave me a prescription. After the 2-minute walk to the chemist took an agonising 20 minutes, I was eventually able to drive home, where I spent 5 days laying down and sleeping. 2 rounds of antibiotics later, and things were better. And when HR pried into why precisely I was off work, which they shouldn't have done really, it was good to tell them the story in full, gory detail. Hey, it was their fault for asking. I was proud to have gone to the doctor with my mystery pain and swelling. My view has always been, you're trained, I'm not. You have a certificate that says you know what to do, and I don't. I hope people listen to the podcast and discover that balls are okay to talk about, and certainly good to have a wee feel about. Thanks, Tom. And thank you, Tom, for that, mildly excruciating, but very educational story with a beautiful and correct message. And yeah, if your balls hurt, don't sit around thinking, oh, they'll get better. Take them in. Usually it'll be treatable, and usually it won't be anything too much to worry about. And we have a second email this week from someone called Tom, also about epididymitis. It's a Tom epidemic of epididymitis. This Tom writes in to say, I had pretty bad pain in my nuts for a few weeks, so decided to go to my GP to get checked out. And notice that's a few weeks of enduring that pretty bad pain. They took a look and I had a feel around and said I should immediately go to my local hospital where someone would be waiting for me. As you can imagine, I was immediately in a panic about a potential cancer down there. I don't have to imagine it, Tom, because this has happened to me. At the hospital, and I can't imagine, I've got aphantasia. At the hospital, I was immediately taken to have an ultrasound and a full examination. After a thorough check, the doctor decided it was a bad case of epididymitis, which is a swelling of the tubes and not too serious, although bloody painful. Because the case was pretty bad, the doctor asked if I would be okay with a few medical students coming in to take a look and give me a quick examination. I agreed immediately, thinking at least something good could come out of this situation, and that it would help students understand the condition better if they could see a real-life example. You're very giving, Tom. I have to say, that's a beautiful thing. What I didn't realise is how many of them there would be. Fully 12 students came in and all had a good rummage around my nethers. I was desperately trying not to make eye contact, but this seemed rude. What is the correct etiquette in this social situation? I don't really know. I think it's don't make eye contact, Tom. I think you had it right there. When they'd all had a go on my man bag, I was able to finally relax. Then 4 more came in and also had a good pummel. Despite this, it could have been a lot worse. I really should have gone to my GP sooner, but thankfully the medication cleared up the problem in a week. Cheers, Tom. You know, it's fairly typical, Tom. You're not alone. A lot of guys, especially men, I think, do leave these things much too long. But the minute your testicles hurt, you know, for more than a second, I would say, get straight down the GP. Next up, I have an email from Leon. This is his story. One day, I found a lump on my lefty, so I went to get scanned, and they said the lump was a harmless cyst, which it usually will be. Okay, that's the good news. Sweet relief. But then the next day, I got a phone call and was told I had to come straight back into hospital. The surgeon said it was cancer and the ball had to go. He was the kind of doctor you would think was a prick ordinarily, but in that situation, his confidence was very comforting. He told me I wasn't going to die, and if I was going to get cancer, this was the one to get. I was relieved that the prognosis was so good, but my wife was a mess. She hadn't expected bad news. Perhaps she thought the results were so good they had to tell me in person. Anyway, when it was time for my surgery 2 days later, the duty doctor did his rounds beforehand and said to me, "So, you're here to have your right testy removed." And I said, "No, left." We looked at each other and it felt like Lauren and Hardy doing a testicular cancer skit. Then he told me that the lump on my left ball was a cyst, but by chance during the scan, they'd found a tumour inside my righty. The luck of that being found has contributed to the subsequent head fuck. That's because I think the part that is discussed and treated the least is the trauma afterwards. I felt almost elated straight after the procedure and made loads of jokes about it. Then that passed and I started to think every headache was a brain tumour. In the end, I got counselling through my oncology department. I spoke to an amazing woman for a few months and it was so helpful. The weird thing about an experience like ours is that everyone sees you as lucky because it was caught early and the treatment was fairly minor. And of course, we are lucky, but not as lucky as people who haven't had cancer. I think it's part of the human condition to see people who've had cancer as almost predetermined. They're cancer people, different to normal people. So we're lucky cancer people and sound ungrateful to moan about getting it. But it's fucking terrifying and leaves you completely changed. You don't feel ill when you get it, so for the rest of your life, you think you could have it at any point. That trauma has been the worst thing for me by far. My situation is similar to yours with a young family. My whole feeling around mortality has changed, and I can't even watch things like the Stand Up To Cancer Great British Bake Off. Anyway, nowadays I'm a lot better and think about it less. It's helped now that I'm only checked every 6 months. The checkups are a double-edged sword, returning to your nightmare for a CT scan to reassure you that you're still all clear. I still don't really understand people who talk about beating cancer. If you successfully crossed a minefield without incident, I wouldn't dance in the next field. It just feels too much like poking the beast. Leon. Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of that resonates with me again, and we do keep coming back to this, but there is this psychological trauma after having experienced this, the worry that it will come back, having faced your mortality, being aware, really painfully aware, that death could come unexpectedly at any minute. It is very difficult to go and live your life. I think you have to try and be positive and think, well, I must go and live my life. I must try and be as healthy as possible. I tried to do that. I did well, then I did badly, and I'm doing well again. So it's by no means something that will always work. We're still human. We still make mistakes. And what Leon says, I think, about getting help for the psychological side, to have some therapy, is not a bad idea. If you're struggling with it, do talk to someone. If that has to be someone professionally, the NHS can help with that, or you can find someone yourself. You don't have to bottle this stuff up. So, you know, it's great for me to hear that I'm not alone in that, because I felt like I was a bit crazy, especially in the year after I had it. I was going back and ringing up the nurse and saying, this has happened. Every time it did turn out to be something, luckily not cancer, but it was cysts or lipoma or different things. So you will become sort of much more aware of your body. Again, a good thing, because you'll spot anything that's bad that's coming up. And yes, it's interesting that Leon sees the regular checkups as being traumatic as well, which again, I understand. It is like, oh, here we go. Are we going to find something? But of course, it's great that you get that regular checkup as well, so that you can at least be reassured every 6 months. Mine's coming up this week. I'm checking myself, and every now and again I think, has that got bigger, has that got smaller? It's really, really difficult to know for sure if anything's wrong. You know, when I found a cyst on my remaining testicle, that was a very, very terrifying time. And so that's actually made me a bit more cautious about checking. So none of this is easy, but hopefully the main lesson is you've survived this one, and let's make the most of the time we have left, because unfortunately none of us are immortal yet. But thank you very much for getting in touch, Leon. Finally today, I have one more ball-related tale from Adam. He says, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer when I was in my early 30s. The treatment I received from the NHS really was first class, and they quickly got me booked in to cut out the naughty right ball. Everything seemed to go pretty well. As is the norm, I was offered a prosthetic, but being engaged to be married, I wasn't expecting many new hands to fondle my love sack, so thought it best to keep it natural and let the left-hand ball have the luxury of a larger dwelling. I've been happy with my choice, and as you mentioned, things seem more streamlined now. Perhaps evolution will lead us to become a race of one bald men in the future. Maybe, or maybe four or five bald, who knows? The hardest thing of all during my treatment was having to give sperm in case post-op things weren't working as they should. Having to go into a sterile room with a small test tube and a dog-eared copy of Escort magazine to pull one off, whilst you had the pressure of a queue of other patient tossers. I mean, I think he means patient tossers. I mean, I think they might be impatient tossers. Waiting their turn outside was a real challenge. Anyway, that tricky wank apart, 16 years on, I feel that being diagnosed with cancer was one of the best things to happen to me. This major shake-up meant I started enjoying life so much more. Knowing that it was finite and that a curveball could change everything, it really gave meaning to carpe diem. Anyway, thanks for these podcasts. I haven't told many people about my testicular cancer, but on the back of your openness, I will now spread the word much more freely from now on. I hope that talking about it will make others check their balls, get medical help sooner, and ultimately save lives. Keep up the good work, Adam. And that's good to get that very positive take on it. And that's also, of course, equally valid. It's great if you take the positives from it. I think I largely did. I sort of fall a little bit between both Leon and Adam in that it did make me very positive about wanting to stay alive. It did make me appreciate life. But equally, there's still those nagging thoughts. But I suppose for all of us, the nagging thoughts are hopefully what propel you on to try and enjoy the life you have. You get to 56, everything starts falling apart anyway. So, you know, enjoy being young while you can. Seize the day! And so here we are, standing at the end of another epic episode of Can I Have My Ball Back? There's another episode coming along very soon, imminently. But until then, remember to thoroughly check yourself and also thoroughly check out my book, Can I Have My Ball Back?, which is now available in paperback and can be found at all good bookshops. It's a terrific read. It's my Booker Prize of the year, I think. Out of all the books I've read, I would say it should be the one that gets the Booker Prize, but it's not up to me to say. Can I Have My Ball Back? Is presented by me, Richard Herring. So many thanks to my guest, Dr. Anand Sharma. I am, of course, indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thanks also to Chris Evans, not that one, my researcher, Alex Hiscock, George Linkford, the incompetent sound man, Rich Evans at Syncbox, and also to everyone at the Bill Murray and the Phoenix, where I recorded the stand-up like I was some kind of Jerry Seinfeld. The music is by the planet fetishist, Gustav Holst. This is a Go Faster Stripe, Sky Potato and Fuzz production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.